Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with American historian James Loewen, whose famous quote, "People have the right to their own opinions, but not their own facts," was expropriated by George Zimmerman on his new website, along with quotes from Thomas Paine and Edmund Burke. Since James Loewen has taught race relations for 20 years and has written about sundown towns that kept blacks out, he is none too happy to be featured on Zimmerman's website. He has an article at the History News Network, George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin, and me. Then, since tomorrow will be the second anniversary of the BP blowout in the Gulf, we will speak with Aaron Viles, who leads the Gulf Restoration Network's response to the BP drilling disaster and the organization's efforts to protect and restore coastal habitats throughout the Gulf. We will discuss the contrast between BP's slick propaganda campaign on TV and the reality on the shores and in the waters of the Gulf and the failure of the Justice Department to prosecute anyone. Then finally, as Earth Day approaches, we will get an assessment of where we stand in the face of the global warming crisis. And since our government is paralyzed by powerful interests who continue to propagate denial, we will look into what citizens can do to save the planet. Gar Lippo, the author of a new book, Solving the Climate Crisis, Public Investment in Social Prosperity to Cool a Fevered Planet, joins us. And joining us now is James Loewen, a sociologist and historian who spent 2 years at the Smithsonian surveying 12 leading high school textbooks of American history, only to find an embarrassing blend of bland optimism, blind nationalism, and plain misinformation. He is a best-selling author of Lies My Teacher Told Me, Everything Your High School History Textbook Got Wrong, Sundown Towns, A Hidden Dimension of American Racism, and The Confederate and Neo-Confederate Reader. He previously taught race relations for 20 years at the University of Vermont and has a piece at the History News Network, George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin, and me. Welcome to Background Briefing, James Loewen.
Hey, I'm glad to be with you.
So tell me how you felt when you were expropriated by George Zimmerman on his new website, along with quotes from Thomas Paine.
It was quite a website. It's kind of like the website I would make if I did my own website. It wasn't very well done. But I was in good company, wasn't I? I mean, the three guys that I was linked with, all of whom are dead, were Thomas Paine, who's kind of a hero of mine in all matters except personal hygiene, and who said a good quote that he used. Edmund Burke, with his famous quote, "The only thing we need for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing." And Henrik Ibsen, the famous playwright. And me. So that was good. And the next thing I felt was, well, he took two whole sentences from Lies My Teacher Told Me, my bestseller, and they stand alone. That is, he didn't rip them out of context. He didn't distort them. So I wasn't upset on that score. I think they say something, I'm doing this from memory, but something like, everybody has a right to their own opinion, but you don't have a right to your own facts. You have to use real facts, not facts that you made up. This quote, incidentally, isn't totally original. It was said by Bernard Baruch more than half a century ago, and then it was said by Daniel Moynihan, and it was probably said by some folks 200 years ago. I don't know. But anyway, on the other hand, there is the other hand. It did kind of worry me that I'd be linked with George Zimmerman. And what's interesting is, here the quote that he uses is on, I think, page 358 of my book, almost at the end. My book, Lies My Teacher Told Me. Could he have read that far? If he had read that far, well, the book is, among other things, an anti-racist work. Unless you're arguing with it, and of course some people do read a book just to rebut it, but unless you're arguing with it, it ought to teach you some things that you didn't know, hopefully, and that show that, gosh, you know, the United States has been dramatically racist towards Native Americans, especially at first, and then also as well, of course, towards African Americans, and that these things still influence our thinking and to some extent even our actions in the present. And that's the kind of stuff I'd like George Zimmerman to have experienced. But I have the feeling that he didn't read a whole bunch of Ibsen plays, and he didn't read a whole bunch of Edmund Burke, and he didn't read a whole bunch of my work. I have the feeling somebody kind of gave him these quotes.
Well, and not to mention Thomas Paine, who, of course,
yes,
the Tea Party have expropriated, even though he was violently anti-religious. And
the Tea Party has taken him?
Oh, yes, they took him a long time ago.
Oh, for heaven's heaven's sake. Well, yes, as you point out, I mean, he's not exactly their, shall we say, cup of tea.
No, and he certainly, in terms of the religious right, you couldn't have chosen a worse standard bearer, in as much as he once said, belief in a cruel God makes a cruel man. So tell me about, I mean, the other thing, James Loewen, that I find extraordinary, again, James Loewen, sociologist and historian, author of Lies My Teachers Told Me, Everything Your High School History Textbook Got Wrong, and Sundown Towns, A Hidden Dimension of American Racism, that has particular echoes in Florida, doesn't it? And there were race riots in the 20s. I think it was at Rosewood or somewhere.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, in Rosewood, in... what is it? It starts with an O, not Ocono, Oconee, I think it is.
It's very close to the Zimmerman country there.
Yeah. Well, yes. On the other hand, you can find sundown towns almost everywhere in the north. I need to say that a sundown town, of course, is a town that's all white on purpose, or for many, many years was. Many of them have reformed and are no longer all white, but many have not. And Florida is just about the only place in the South that has a whole lot of them. All the way around the outside of Florida, many, many towns, including large cities like Miami Beach, flatly kept out, in the case of Miami Beach, Jews and probably black folks. Cape Coral, probably. Gulfport, for sure. And then a few towns in the inside of Florida also did this. Ocoee, I think that's the name of it. For some reason, I'm looking at my map, and I can't see it right now. However, Sanford wasn't a sundown town, so far as I know. So I don't want to tar Zimmerman, you know, with that brush particularly. I think it's interesting, though, that all kinds of Americans, including many of our major political leaders, grew up in or chose to live in or even still live in sundown towns. And people don't call them on it and need to know about it.
Give us some names, if you will, James Loewen.
Well, both our last president, George W. Bush, and our last vice president, Darth Vader. No, that wasn't his name. He wasn't my very favorite.
Richard Cheney, M. Cheney,
course,
yes. Yeah.
Chose to live in Highland Park, Texas. Now, Highland Park, in a way, you could call it a suburb of Dallas. I use the term inburb because it's entirely surrounded by Dallas, it and its sister inburb, University Park. And both of them were set up to be free of blacks. And, in fact, the only African-Americans allowed to live in Highland Park were live-in servants. And that was true really only until about four years ago, when the first black family ever bought a house in Highland Park. There was a big controversy, incidentally, after the Brown versus Board of Education decision, especially when it started being enforced, because the live-in servants in Highland Park, some of them had children, and those children were, of course, not allowed to go to school at all in Highland Park, and so they had an arrangement that they would go to the closest school in Dallas, and I think maybe Highland Park had to pay some kind of tuition fee for them in Dallas. And then Brown v. Board came down, Dallas stopped that. And as a result, there was a move to throw all of these families out of Highland Park, even as live-in servants. And I actually think they did it, although I'm not at all sure if they did or not. But I know there were politicians who argued this is what we have to do because we certainly can't have them in our public schools.
Well, but sundown towns also has a sinister connotation, surely, that after sundown...
You're not allowed.
You're not allowed, yeah. And maybe your life's in danger.
And that's pretty much true. I have talked with people who themselves saw African-American maids running to catch the last bus out of a Los Angeles suburb, for instance, lest they be stranded in town after dark. I talked with the daughter of a man who was a taxi driver in a Indiana town, who, out of the goodness of his heart, actually, would give black folks a ride to the edge of town so that they wouldn't be in trouble because they were there as dark approached. So it was. But of course, the main point, even if you could be there until say 8 p.m., you couldn't live there. And these are terrible towns, terrible inventions, because they make it all too easy to think to conclude, well, it's right to live like this. Very few people say, well, it's wrong, and my parents did a terrible thing by raising me there, or especially if they're not the kid, if they're the person. I mean, President Bush, before he was president, living in University Park, in Highland Park, can hardly say to himself, it's wrong for me to live in a town that's all white on purpose. So what's the alternative? I think the alternative says it's all right to do that, and what's the rationale for it being all right? Well, because we should be keeping them, and of course I'm using them with italics, out. So I think it's possible to grow up non-racist or not racist in a sundown town, but I don't think it's very easy.
Again, I'm speaking with James Lowen, sociologist and historian. He previously taught race relations for 20 years at the University of Vermont and has a piece at the History News Network, George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin, and Me. Do you think anything good can come of this Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman thing? Of course, the trial hasn't begun, and we don't know whether or not he'll be convicted of second-degree murder or something less. But we do have memories, of course, of the O.J. Simpson trial that was very polarizing. Not that there's any comparison there.
Well, I think a better example would be the Rodney King trial. Because, of course, in the case of Rodney King, the police were actually doing the beating, and there was no death. But like this Trayvon Martin case, it became a flashpoint, a point of consciousness for black folks all across the country. And I think that's too bad. I wish that hadn't happened. And while I don't want I am white myself. While I don't want African Americans to be uninformed, I don't want them to be stupid, not at all. But at the same time, I think we can make too much of the details of a case like this in Florida, which we don't know that much about. Now, the good thing about it being such a flashpoint is it looks like a correction has taken place, we hope. At the very least, we have a new prosecutor, and we seem to have a prosecution, whereas before it got all this media attention, we didn't have any prosecution. It looked like it was all going to be just okay. So I have to contradict myself and say, well, I guess the media attention was a good thing. At this point, I hope that we have a completely open trial with good evidence coming out. And I think that to the degree that we have that, that'll be what we need. If that evidence shows that, yeah, George Zimmerman was right to feel attacked, and any normal person in that situation would have felt attacked, hopefully that'll be bought by everybody, at least by most of everybody. If, on the other hand, the evidence shows, this is an outrage, it clearly shows racial profiling, and this kid was clearly trying to get away, then I hope that everyone on every side will be convinced again, and Zimmerman will be put away.
Well, I think what we do know, and I agree with you, a lot of people have jumped the gun and assumed things without the facts, and the trial will be very useful in as much as facts will be presented and explored. What we do know is that the police department down there in Sanford was obviously incredibly racist because they took the body of Trayvon Martin, did not inform the parents, even though they had his cell phone, and they did drug tests on Trayvon Martin's body and didn't drug test George Zimmerman, which is fairly routine.
I think that, let's see, you use the term incredibly racist. Well, I guess so. It's certainly an outrage, and they should have both been tested.
What about a parent not knowing what happened to their kid for 3 days?
And that's an I didn't even notice that. Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. All right. Now I'm getting upset.
Well, I don't want you to get too upset because I still want to talk to you about the broader issues which you've, of course, have explored over the years, James Lowen, again, a sociologist and historian, previously taught race relations for 20 years at the University of Vermont and has a piece at the History News Network, George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin, and Me. And his quotes appeared in the new website of George Zimmerman, quoting James Lowen's statement from an early book, Lies My Teacher Told Me Everything Your High School History Textbook Got Wrong, the quote being, people have a right to their own opinions, but not their own facts. Evidence must be located, not created, and opinions not backed by evidence cannot be given much weight. it does seem that the truth has become a moving target in the United States today. There's little consensus on what the truth is. People do their own reality shopping. Christians go to Christian networks, liberals go to MSNBC, conservatives to Fox for their information and their reality. In politics, he who spins the truth most cleverly wins the argument. Is there any way, do you think, that and a lot of people, particularly I think on the conservative side, don't even believe in data. They deny global warming and evolution. So how do you think we restore some kind of consensus in this country about basic facts, empirical thinking, data?
Sure. Well, I think that's a very good question, and I think you phrased it well. That is to say, all of the examples that you gave are examples of they're really happening, and they're really serious. I think it's not hopeless. Let me speak from my own experience. Last January, by which I mean 14, 15 months ago in January, I wrote an op-ed piece for the Washington Post. And amazingly enough, it actually got printed. I even got paid for it. It's in their series called Five Myths. And my title was Five Myths About Why the South Seceded. Now, this is something near and dear to my heart, because here we are 150 years after secession. The state of South Carolina seceded first, of course, and it left the Union just before Christmas, 150 years ago. And on Christmas Eve, that is December 24th of last year, was the 150th anniversary of their statement as to why they left the Union. Well, they are quite clear. They say that they are against states' rights and in favor of slavery. And they list the states and they list the rights that really upset them. Pennsylvania, for instance, trying in little bitty ways to kind of interfere with the action of the Fugitive Slave Act, which was a titanic national act, the strongest national act up until that time. New York no longer allowing what's called temporary slavery or slavery transit, so that you couldn't bring your cook into New York for a couple of weeks while you watched Broadway plays or something. She became free. Well, South Carolina rants about these things and gives them as reasons why she is leaving the United States. What it's all about is slavery. And to some extent, the election of Lincoln, and the reason they're upset by the election of Lincoln, and they say this openly, is because he's against slavery. Well, I have asked thousands and thousands of people across the United States, why did the South secede? And what I get overwhelmingly is they seceded for states' rights, even though I just told you, quoting the documents, that they seceded against states' rights. So teachers and others, just general Americans, are 180 degrees wrong about this, and yet we've been going on for 150 years since it happened. So that's just an example of the problem. Well, I wrote this in my Washington Post article, and I got 1,200 emails as a result. It turns out it was the most read piece at the Washington Post for all of last year. A lot of these people were arguing with me. They were what we would call neo-Confederates, the kind of people you were just mentioning who maybe they listened to the right-wing Rush Limbaugh and such, but probably not, because he might be too far left for them. Emails were vicious, some of them. You can always tell you got a problem if the title of the email says, "You are so full of," and I won't say this on the radio, but you know where I'm going. Mm-hmm. But I replied to all of them but two. Two were just too disgusting. And my reply, basically, to this kind of email went, "Well, your quarrel is really not with me." And sometimes I'd say, comma, full of blank or not, but your quarrel is with what the Confederate states said as they left the Union. Why don't you read my book, The Confederate and Neo-Confederate Reader, which is my newest book, and with a co-author, and it actually contains all this information that I just mentioned. Well, do you know, I got back, I don't know, maybe as many as 8, maybe even 10 replies saying, "Well, you got a point, and in fact, I'm going to do that." One person even said, "I just ordered the book from Amazon." So, you know, other people did write back and say, I don't care what you say, you're still so full of. But I did reach some of them. So I think it can be done, and we just have to keep doing it.
Well, James Lowen, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Well, it's been a pleasure being on.
Again, I've been speaking with James Lowen, who's a sociologist and historian who spent 2 years at the Smithsonian surveying 12 leading high school textbooks of American history, only to find an embarrassing blend of bland optimism, blind nationalism, and plain misinformation. He is the best-selling author of Lies My Teacher Told Me, Everything Your High School History Textbook Got Wrong, Sundown Towns, A Hidden Dimension of American Racism, and The Confederate and Neo-Confederate Reader. He previously taught race relations for 20 years at the University of Vermont and has a piece at the History News Network, George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin, and me. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about tomorrow's second anniversary of the BP blowout in the Gulf just on the eve of Earth Day.
I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come.